This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Good evening, this is Rock Cash, your host this week on The People Speak. The People Speak invites audience participation. You can listen in by phone calling 716-748-0144, or if you have a smartphone or a computer, go to bbsradio.com, navigate to station 2, and click on the listen icon. You can also participate during the show with calling questions for our guests. Toll free, United States and Canada, 888-429-5471. Joining me tonight, Rania Kalik. She's an independent journalist. She's appeared on RT News. She's a human rights activist. She's also appeared on Al Jazeera America. You can follow Rania on her blog, Dispatches from the Underclass, at raniakalik.com. Rania, good evening.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's a pleasure. We're here to discuss this movie, The Sniper, and how it's creating Islamophobia and anti-Arabism.
Yeah, so American Sniper has been out for, it's been like probably over a month now, and it's gotten lots of attention. It's been nominated for several Oscars, I think 6. And it is, you know, as someone, I've seen the movie, and I've also read the book that it is based on. And I have to say, I mean, it is very much a piece of propaganda that completely whitewashes the war in Iraq, and that really presents this this American sniper who is supposedly the deadliest sniper in American history as a hero, when in reality he was somebody who said in his own words that he enjoyed killing Iraqi savages, and he only wishes he could have killed more. And it's inspired, I mean, people have left the movie theater inspired to kill Arabs and Muslims according to their social media posts. They leave the theater and they post on social media, and this has been a lot of people posting that they want to, you know, go over and kill ragheads. And so, yeah, it's very unsettling, the response to this movie. Which has been a deep hatred and Islamophobia and anti-Arab sentiment, as well as the celebration of this movie in this country.
Well, it seems not only him, but there's other propagandists that are being brought to life, like this guy that's supposedly in Iraq fighting against ISIS. This guy is a private mercenary. You know, these people are being brought on to the mainstream media for a certain purpose, and that is, I believe, to incite Christians here in the United States to go fight a war.
Well, you know, I don't know about exactly who you're talking about, but I will say that this movie, particularly American Sniper, and this is something that I hadn't mentioned in my article on it or what I've written about it, but it's also, you know, inspired a younger generation to, at least according to social media posts, to go sign up for the military. And I really think that in a few months, what we'll see is that this movie has, you know, will end up having an impact on raising recruitment numbers in the military. I won't be surprised to see that. In fact, I almost, you know, I would put money on I would wager on that'll be the case. And it's not surprising. I mean, the movie really does present, you know, some people have said the movie is an anti-war film because it shows the psychological toll and in the physical toll that war takes on American soldiers. And it does. It shows injured American soldiers, and it shows, like, you know, how hard it is on families, sure. But at the same time, it really does completely whitewash the Iraq war, and it hero washes invading U.S. soldiers in a really disturbing way. Where you also, and it also, it just, it shows the local Iraqis as, you know, as really cruel, just like you know, emotionless, cold monsters, even the women and children who just want to kill people. They're all terrorists. And it, you know, it really does, like, if you don't know, if, as most Americans are very uninformed about the Iraq War, the reasons, you know, the reasons we went in there and how it was a lot based on a lie, and how we destroyed that country. Most Americans are very ignorant of this. And so when somebody who's uninformed watches this movie, they'll come out thinking that the Middle East is full of crazy people who just want to kill each other and Americans. And it ends up legitimizing the ongoing bombing campaigns that seem to be intensifying in the Middle East as we speak. And so I'm not surprised that even though it does show what it does to some soldiers in a sort of very shallow way, it also, I mean, I'm not surprised to see people coming out thinking that, you know, we have to be bombing the Middle East. And maybe if they already have, you know, preconceived notions about, you know, what they think of Arabs and Muslims, maybe even wanting to go over there themselves.
Yeah, well, this person's name that's been out on Fox News recently has been showing up on the mainstream media. His name is Jordan Mattson. And I looked up his military records because I'm former military, of course. And I looked up his records, and it seemed like he was only in for about a year. And then he opted out, was discharged from the military, and he joined a mercenary group just to go over there and kill people. These are private corporations that are fueling this war and inciting hatred and bigotry so they can make money. And that's
the end game. Who sent them there?
I'm gathering that it would either be Blackwaters or...
But on behalf of who? On behalf of, like, the U.S. government?
I don't know clearly, and I don't want to make any statements on that, but I would probably say so on behalf of the 1% he's over there fighting. Because, of course, we know war is a business, and luckily I learned that before sending myself off to go to Iraq in the first campaign against Saddam Hussein. I realized that this war was a proxy war, and it was set up, and inevitably, it was going to fuel into something much larger later on. But what I also realized, being former military, is that the media is a fuel pot of inciting hatred.
And no, I would absolutely agree, yeah.
And it is the front line of propaganda to incite people to go fight wars. Because people naturally don't want to fight. People don't want to hate. They just want to live their lives. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are closet racists and a lot of people in the majority of the population of the world. You'll find some sort of racism in one point or another. But people always need a little bit of a push. And it seems like the mainstream media is giving that push heavy-handedly.
No, I mean, absolutely. I think that what you see in the media, and it isn't just Fox News by any means. I mean, Fox News is probably the most outwardly and openly hateful. But what you see is, you know, even like on the supposed liberal media, if you will, on MSNBC, for example, and on CNN, on every media. I mean, you turn on cable news, especially over the past couple months with ISIS being in the news more and more, is you do see this vilification and demonization of Arabs and Muslims, and this conflation of they're all the same, right? So like if ISIS commits an act of brutality, as it often does, somehow all Muslims and all Arabs are responsible for it. And so this is a very dangerous message. And I think that we're seeing that message play out in what we saw happen, or, you know, what we saw happen in North Carolina, I think is a reflection of that in Chapel Hill. Not necessarily it's directly related, like it's directly responsible, but I think it is a reflection of a societal problem here. And I think we're seeing it as well with the vandalism that's happening at mosques across the country. There was a mosque that was set fire to in Houston, Texas. And there was another one that was defaced in Rhode Island. And I mean, there's like too many instances of this kind of, you know, hateful graffiti and just hate crimes in general to really keep count at this point. But it does seem to be intensifying. And I think that last week, after what happened in Chapel Hill with three young Muslim students being murdered in cold blood by their neighbor. I think that really took some of the heat off for for a few days. The media sort of it covered this story and gave some attention to it. But then there was an attack in Copenhagen, and suddenly it was just kind of back to business as usual. And you know, now again, it's like turn on the news and it's just constant vilification and, you know, dehumanization. And so, yeah, I think that all of this plays a part, all of this, the media, the news media and the way it covers this issue, American Sniper and movies like it, and, you know, the way that Arabs and Muslims are depicted. And what's really, you know, unfortunate about all this is in the process, you know, a couple things are happening. First, you know, we're not talking about any kind of context, right? Like, it's like if everybody really does want to deal with ISIS and is scared of ISIS, we're not talking about where ISIS comes from. I mean, it's the rise of ISIS is a direct result of the U.S. destruction of Iraq and, you know, destabilization of other countries like Libya that the U.S. led. You know, that plays a role too when we see ISIS in groups like ISIS, you know, proliferating in Libya. It's become sort of a breeding ground for jihadist groups from around the Middle East. And so we never talk about this kind of stuff. And it's important to talk about where ISIS comes from. And it's important to talk about where all this extremism comes from, not just to say the U.S. played a role and, like, you know, people need to be held responsible, but also if we want to deal with it. And the problem is that all the answers are the same. You know, we want to deal with it by bombing, airstrikes. That's like the only answer anybody has. And it's just going to make the situation worse. For Muslim Americans here, and also Muslims and Arabs abroad, who, by the way, happen to be at the forefront. You know, they're the ones who are being killed the most by terrorist groups like ISIS. That's another thing I find bizarre is, you know, a couple weeks ago when the Jordanian pilot was burned alive. You know, that was really, really horrific. This was an Arab Muslim man that was killed in a really brutal way by ISIS, and somehow that resulted in more like collective hatred of Arabs and Muslims and incitement against Arabs and Muslims. I mean, it's just a really bizarre the way all of this is playing out. And I think it has dangerous consequences.
Well, that incident there, me personally, my personal view on that is, and knowing how propaganda works, I believe it was done to make the Jordanian King looked like a hero all of a sudden, because he was losing support from his people.
Yeah, and you know what was really weird about all that is the Jordanian king sort of became this icon of like the conservatives online. It was really bizarre. Like, conservatives were all of a sudden making a hero out of the Jordanian king, and were like, oh, why can't Obama be more like him? It was the one time I've ever seen conservatives hold up an Arab.
Well, that was, you know, that was just a replay of Obama bin Laden playing the bin Laden game there and taking out bin Laden just when his presidency was online and people were exposing that he wasn't a natural born citizen of the United States. You know, this is the propaganda that they play. There was news going around the internet that this pilot had actually radioed back that he was witnessing the Americans dropping off weapons to ISIS systematically.
Oh, I never saw that.
And he was shot down. He was shot down by a missile. So this is the one ISIS death that I believe actually happened. I believe the rest of it was all propaganda. Even the one with the so-called beheadings of the Egyptians. Now the Egyptians are attacking Libya. This is
I think that's a collaboration
of all of the governments.
Well, I think that ISIS wants to draw in. It gains power from American involvement, and it gains power from the involvement of the Arab dictator regimes. Like, I mean, that's how it. That fuels ISIS. That's how it recruits it. And so, you know, there's a reason. I mean, there's a reason these acts are so brutal. They're brutal the way they are, and they're videotaped the way they are, to provoke a response. And so,
correct.
I mean, that's the purpose of them, and that's exactly what ISIS wants. I mean, that's how it's gaining territory. And so, but I mean, what airstrikes really, I mean, they destabilize. The more territory that's destabilized, the more ISIS can, you know, expand. But when it comes to what we're seeing, I think, well, you know, like what we're seeing in the United States right now, though, it's really scary. I mean, you have after, you know, the death threats and hatred that has been inspired by American Sniper got so bad, that the Arab American Anti-Discrimination Committee had like basically put out an alert saying, you know, telling Arabs and Muslims and anybody who looks like them to, you know, be on alert, you know, be aware, because, you know, and that they're working with the FBI to make sure none of these threats, you know, to deal with any of these threats in case they are actual, you know, real threats to be concerned about. And so this is very unsettling that's what's taking place right now. And it seems that what's really worrying about it is it seems to be acceptable.
It is. It's very, very unsettling, especially here in the United States, because, of course, you'll have vigilante groups going out and just attacking random people for the hell of it. Retardation comes very simply to people that are easily manipulated. I want to focus on the ISIS videos for a second real quick. I did not know that ISIS had a direct contact to get orange jail jumpsuits, you know, to put these prisoners in.
There's a reason they do that. It's apparently like supposed to be symbolic because of Guantanamo.
There's nothing to do with that. I don't know if you remember the Nick Berg beheading that happened in Abu Ghraib. And this was the United States that pretty much had him in their possession. So once again, it's not a symbol of Guantanamo Bay, but once again, where does ISIS get these bright orange uniforms? Do they, you know, have a supplier somewhere here in the United States mailing it to them? Because this is something that we use here in the United States for our prisoners, and it's not used worldwide.
I don't think it's difficult to make orange jumpsuits.
No, it's not difficult. I just see propaganda more than I see actual beheadings or actual killings. And I've seen a lot of propaganda.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's any question that ISIS is committing atrocities. Just, I mean, it's like there's no question about that. I'm not necessarily focused on trying to dispel that or anything. I think that what's more important is to understand where ISIS comes from. I mean, it exists. ISIS does exist. There is like it's a terrorist organization that exists, and it's like it has very specific aims.
I see it as a mercenary group. I see it as a private militia that's being hired by the elite to create the chaos so we can create a world war.
I mean, I don't see any proof of that. What I do see is that the United States and other Western powers have spent decades destabilizing the Middle East. This is like a symptom of that. It's kind of to be accepted. This is the outcome of that. I think the majority of the top people in ISIS spent time in CIA black sites being tortured. I think that ISIS is just kind of like another part of the blowback that happens. And I think it's kind of like Al-Qaeda. It's like, where did Al-Qaeda come from? Al-Qaeda is a symptom of U.S. destructive policies in Afghanistan, right?
Al-Qaeda was a direct involvement of the United States. Bin Laden worked for them directly.
Right. That's why I was like, exactly. I mean, that's the point is like, and this is what you see too when it comes to ISIS, you see, or when it comes to these sort of more extremist groups in general, the U.S. in some cases will side with these types of groups and has historically sided with them when it behooves U.S. geopolitical interests, and then it fights them when it benefits U.S. geopolitical interests. And so, but you know, right now, what you're seeing is, you know, Iraq was completely destroyed. And ISIS rose from the ashes of Iraq, and then, you know, Syria being destabilized for a number of reasons, you know, that helped ISIS as well. And now it's this big, massive group that's growing. And, you know, I don't know if it's necessarily quite the threat that it's made out to be, but I do think that in terms of, you know, at least locally in the Middle East, it has become a serious threat that should create cause for concern. And I think that the way it's being handled, if it, you know, is going to, you know, especially if we ramp up the airstrikes and, you know, deal with it like by force, the way it's being dealt with, you know, with this coalition of dictatorial regimes that are almost, you know, that are in a lot of ways just as repressive as ISIS to certain segments of their populations, we're just going to see ISIS grow stronger, and we're going to see it crop up in other parts of the Middle East.
Correct. This is Rock Cash here on People Speak Radio at the BBS Radio Network with our guest, Rania Kalik. Anyways, Rania, what next? What do you foresee happening? I believe that this might be something to entice maybe a civil war or create hysteria between most Americans to the point to where nobody can trust their neighbor.
I mean, I think that's a bit, you know, I don't know if it's gonna be quite that extreme with a civil war. I don't know. I mean, I can't predict the future. What I do know is that the culture war, if you will, like when it comes to, you know, liberals versus conservatives in this country, that is becoming, I think, more, I guess becoming more hardened. And, you know, we do see like this big gap between what the right, you know, what the right wants and what the, like, the quote unquote left wants, I suppose. Especially when it comes to the Middle East. I think the Middle East has sort of become the defining issue of what we like to call the culture wars when it comes to U.S. politics. I don't know where that's going to go. I think it's also kind of interesting with Israel as well. The Israel-Palestine issue is increasingly becoming a part of that paradigm, where, you know, liberals are, you know, are less, you know, or where conservatives are just like, you know, extremely overwhelmingly obsessively pro-Israel, and to where, you know, liberals are sort of becoming, you know, are sort of turning away from Israel, and they're not, especially younger generation of liberals and self-identified Democrats. But I mean, I do see the Middle East is really becoming a defining issue in a lot of ways, but I don't know where that's going to lead. I can't predict that.
Yeah, me neither. But I do hear a lot of Israelis talking about expansion to greater Israel. So this could be all a compilation of the incitement so they can get everybody fighting it while they take control of the entire area or the resources in the area to control.
So Israel has, you know, the government in Israel is becoming increasingly right wing. And it is, I mean, it's very, you know, pro expansion. It's very anti two states. And it's very interesting. I mean, that's the kind of talk you hear in Israel, is, you know, from leading politicians, is this idea of greater Israel and, you know, expansion and settlement. And the Israeli government is turning so far to the right. I think that's why, you know, that's why it's becoming such a culture issue in the U.S., because you have this alignment between the far right in the U.S. and the far right wing government of Israel. And I think you see a similar paradigm playing out in Europe as well, where, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, is basically a neoconservative. He is very divisive wherever he goes, whether it's in Europe or the United States. He's supposed to come give a speech to Congress next month, basically bashing Obama's policy towards Iran. I'm not a big Obama fan, but I do think that, you know, that I do think that he's moving in a better direction toward, you know, with Iran than conservatives want to move. And so Netanyahu coming here is very divisive. I mean, it's very divisive because, unfortunately, it's divisive because he disrespected the president, and he's a Democratic president, which, you know, in my opinion, it should be divisive whenever Netanyahu comes here, because Israel is engaged in apartheid and just, you know, killed 2,000 people, including 500 children, last summer. But
well, from what I from what I've read is, you know, from Jewish newspapers, is that he's being told not to come by Abe Foxman and people like that here. AIPAC are asking Netanyahu not to show up.
Right, because they recognize that his speech is pushing away Democrats. I mean, for the first time, you've got actual Democrats in Congress. I mean, not a lot of them, but enough of them for the first time are saying we're going to boycott this speech. I mean, that's a big deal in terms of the bipartisan support for Israel that you see. I mean, and I just mean in rhetoric. I don't mean in actual actions. I mean, the U.S., mm-hmm. you know, the Democrats aren't going to start saying we should be, you know, we should take away, the weapons that we give Israel. That's not going to happen. But the rhetoric, I think, is important in some ways. And so for the first time, you do see the rhetoric going against Israel and you see criticism of Israel that otherwise wouldn't be happening. And I think that, you know, the ADL and Abe Foxman and other Zionist organizations and lobbying groups they recognize that and they see this as very embarrassing and they see this as very they understand that this will have a negative consequence in the long run because they recognize that support for Israel among Democrats, especially younger generation of Democrats, is waning very, very quickly. And so that is, you know, Israel basically, I mean, the United States is Israel's biggest benefactor. So that doesn't, you know, bode well for Israel in future years if this decline continues. But I don't think there's anything that they can do to stop that. I think that the Israeli government and the Israeli public is on a path towards the extreme right, and that won't be stopped until the U.S. does something about it by, you know, like basically cutting them off. And I think that as Israel moves increasingly to the right, as it has been, where, you know, genocidal rhetoric is being employed openly against Palestinians, I think that as Israel continues to move in that direction, you'll see more open disgust for it in the U.S. And at some point, they won't have a choice because at the grassroots level, especially Democrats at the grassroots level, you know, there won't be any support. And Democrats will just at some point have to, you know, cease their support. At least a lot of them will, I think. And you know, the organizations like ADL understand that.
I don't think it's just the far left that's, giving up on its support for Israel. I believe a lot of the younger generation, whether left or right, or even if they have a political stature anymore, because a lot of the younger generation is hip to what's going on worldwide, and I believe that Israel is losing support from the younger generations worldwide. So,
I agree. And I think that a lot of that has to do with information is easier to access. It's not as controlled. In Gaza over the summer, it wasn't just like CNN that you could get news from. There was like this entire world online that you could see what was happening in real time and people from Gaza, you know, tweeting pictures and tweeting what they were going through and talking about. I mean, so there's just like this younger generation has access to information and in a really tangible way that I think, and also like, you know, the kind of racism that is, you know, that is institutional policy in Israel, and the kind of settler colonialism that Israel is involved in is, you know, very archaic and, you know, it's unacceptable. And it's really reminiscent of some of the darkest chapters. I mean, U.S. history, the U.S. is by no means perfect at all. Not holding it up as some kind of like bastion of like racial equality. But, you know, Jim Crow is not a thing anymore in this country, at least not openly, the way it was practiced. But like that's basically what Israel practices. And so, you know, it's just that's unacceptable. And it's hard to it's hard for Israel to lie about that and to lie about the facts on the ground, especially with such easier access to information. So I think that's one of the major reasons why you see so many young people turning away from it.
Great. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back here on The People Speak with our guest, Rania Kalik, and our awesome sound engineer, Don Newsom.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, It's on bbsradio.com.
Hi, I'm Richard Belzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive. But there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
We're back. This is your host, Rock Cash, with our guest, Rania Kalik, and we're discussing the movie American Sniper and Islamophobia that is being created by this movie. Rania, back on the topic of the sniper, can you come to any terms with any type of reasoning for this movie besides hatred or incitement?
Well, the book American Sniper that it's based on was a bestseller. And so it was like the, you know, as soon as it did as well as it did, it was bought by, I think, like Warner Brothers, the rights to make a movie out of it. And that's what they did. It also, it's not just hatred, but it's that the movie and the storyline itself and the storyline that Chris Kyle presents is what a lot of Americans like to hear and want to hear, especially middle white America, about the Iraq War. It tells a story that makes Americans feel good, which is that, you know, we went over there, we were heroes, and we fought terrorists and these like inferior people from this inferior culture who hate us and want to kill us. Our soldiers like sacrificed all this and it wasn't in vain, you know, like to tell the truth about the Iraq War would be, would shatter people's identities, I think, in a lot of ways. I mean, people who supported that war and support U.S. militarism abroad, and think that it's, you know, to keep us safe. To admit that Iraq was based on a lie would be to, and that we destroyed that country, and that it killed, it would be to admit that the U.S. soldiers that died, died in, you know, they died for a lie. They died to enrich the bank accounts of, you know, of
1%ers.
Of draft dodging, yeah, of draft dodging neocons like Dick Cheney.
George Bush.
And George Bush. That's, I mean, that's what they died for. And it's awful, but that's the truth. And that is something that the, you know, that U.S., the people in the U.S. don't, I mean, nobody who wants to, you know, who wants to acknowledge that, right? Especially people who, especially people on the right, you know, and there's, but there's liberal support. I mean, even in the aftermath of this war, I mean, there's like a liberal refusal. They'll admit that the war was devastating and it was based on a lie, but there's still this refusal to come to terms with what we did to Iraq. And we, I mean, we destroyed that country. Like a million people were left, you know, dead. There, you know, that like this, I mean, this country used to be like, used to have like a very vibrant civil society. It used to have one of the highest literacy rates in the Middle East. It used to have a very rich culture, and we destroyed that. And it's still being destroyed. And I mean, and nobody, I mean, that's something, it's one thing to even talk, you know, it's one thing to even start to talk about the fact that U.S. soldiers were hurt by this war. It's like, God, the devastation to Iraqis was just so overwhelming. So yeah, I think that this movie, it reaffirms those false beliefs about the Iraq war, about the war on terror, and about what we were fighting. And makes us feel good. But the reality is that, you know, we, the United States, illegally invaded a sovereign country based on false pretenses or based on a false premise that was completely, that was based on a lie. And, you know, in the process, it made everyone less safe. It made Iraqis certainly less safe, and it made Americans less safe.
Well, I see the United States acting like the Vikings. They pillage and plunder. And
That seems to be
what happened in Iraq. You know, I believe that they're after the antiquities. And if, as I research into the Knights of Templars, I realize that this is the reason why there was a crusade in the first place. You know, the Khazars wanted to get the riches of the Judeans, and they used pretty much Christianity back in the 1400s to go do that. I think that's what it's all about. I believe that there might be technology in the antiquities, and this is what they're after. They didn't get it all, so that's why they want to go back into Iraq.
I mean, I have never heard that line before, but I mean, I think that it's pretty obvious the U.S. went into Iraq for, you know, for resources, definitely, but also just this plan to sort of remake the Middle East in an more easily controllable way. And I think that blew up in the face of the planners. I mean, and also, of course, yeah, like to loot the country, which is what happens. But I think what we're seeing now is like the blowback from that destruction. And I think that if anything, I mean, I don't know. I think that there's a little bit of reluctance to necessarily go back into Iraq completely.
Okay.
In terms of like reoccupying it, there's definitely reluctance to do that.
No, I don't think there was reluctance. There was a reluctance to leaving in the first place. They were asked to leave. Anyways, I've got a question from a audience member. Chuck in Seattle wants to know if you think that the CIA or Mossad may have been involved in the 9/11 attacks and tried to blame and frame the Arab Muslims.
I mean, I've not seen any evidence of that whatsoever. I think what happened was that that mostly, I think Saudi hijackers, Saudi national, hijacked a plane and committed a terrorist attack on the United States. And it's not surprising that it happened, considering, you know, what the U.S. has done to other countries. It was blowback. I think that it's kind of, you know, I don't understand why that's difficult to believe that there would be blowback against the United States.
Okay,
it doesn't justify it.
I've got a couple of callers with questions. Mike on line 3, go ahead.
Hello, Rania. It's good to hear you. Refreshing to hear someone in the media. Actually, you're not in mainstream media. You're an independent journalist.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish you were on mainstream media. And my question for you is, are you Muslim or of Middle Eastern extraction? And did you receive any kind of threats because of your opinion regarding American Sniper? And the second question was, you know, it seems like America has a long history of vilifying the Middle East or Arabs. I was watching an old film called The Exodus. This was produced in 1960s about how the Jews came to Israel. And it's just a pure propaganda piece, and it portrays Muslims in that as terrorists as well, as bloodthirsty killers. And do you think, really, that, you know, that has a lot to do with the mindset of many Americans throughout history in this country towards Arabs and Muslims?
To your first question about American, or, well, I guess you asked if my background, my parents are Lebanese. I was born here, but yeah, so I'm like, you know, I'm Lebanese American, and I'm not Muslim, but I am Arab. So I do receive, I mean, people do assume I'm Muslim, especially because of what I write about, and I have, you know, an Arabic name. So I did, you know, in the aftermath of American Sniper, with the criticism that I gave, I did receive a deluge of death threats, like I've never received before, by people purporting to love, you know, free speech, which was strange, because they were threatening to kill me because of my speech. But yeah, and it wasn't just me. It was like the Arab community collectively was receiving threats of, like, you know, we want to kill Arabs after seeing this movie. So that was really disturbing. And I do agree. I think that there's a long history that, you know, of the U.S. media, or I'm sorry, of like movies, and especially movies, I mean, vilifying Arabs and Muslims in, like, the Middle East. and it goes back to Orientalism. And I, you know, that's sort of the way that imperialists have dealt with the Middle East. That's the way, you know, to sort of get the population to, you know, if you dehumanize people, it makes it easier to accept, you know, killing them.
I did some research on the Exodus, and they said that at that time in the 60s, the Exodus, both the book and later the film, became like where they were a staple of every Jewish family. And
they played a major role
in the American minds that Israel was an ally and should be supported at any cost.
Israel has played a major role in pushing that narrative as well, because pushing that Orientalist narrative of Arabs and Muslims makes it, helps push propaganda that Israel is this bastion of democracy, a country that should, the way it treats Palestinians is okay because, you know, look at Arabs and Muslims and how awful they are. And it has, and that movie played a major role. I mean, there's been like papers written on this, right? Played a major role in bringing, in sort of promoting Zionism amongst American Jews.
And I must ask one more thing. On the other end of that, what about AIPAC and the control of, of the Congress and American policy? And with that, I'll leave you with that question. Thank you.
Well, I don't know, like, specifically what you mean, but I guess, yeah, like AIPAC and, AIPAC and a number of other lobbying organizations they have control over Israel-Palestine policy to the point where when Gaza is being bombed with U.S. arms and children are being slaughtered on the beach, for playing soccer, every single senator, all 50 senators, supporting resolutions backing Israel's right to continue to indiscriminately, you know, slaughter civilians in Gaza. And so, yeah, there's absolutely a stranglehold by organizations like AIPAC over policy. And when it comes to Israel, I think that is, at some point that's going to wane and weaken amongst Democrats. I think we're gonna see that happen in probably the near future. But yeah, it is. I mean, it is hard to compete with that. And it's been hard to compete with that, right? With like the amount of, you know, control and money and connections that organizations like AIPAC have. But I don't think that will last forever.
I don't think it's lasting forever either, because a lot of people are waking up to the propaganda and they're turning to social media more than they are turning to the mainstream media. With that, it's actually a victory for the injustices that are going on, not only by Israel, but also by the United States. There isn't one war where we haven't vilified our enemy, whether it was the war against Germany or even the American Indians were vilified as we slaughtered and massacred them here in the United States. So that goes a very, very long way. And it goes back with the propaganda of making the people that you want to destroy look like your enemies and make them look like savages and animals and everything else. And these neocons have learned that lesson throughout time, that you have to vilify people in order to destroy them.
Exactly. So,
this is what's been going on here. And we are listening to the people speak. This is Rock Cash, your host, with my guest, Ronnie Kolick, and we're discussing Islamophobia created by the movie Sniper. Rania, as far as I'm concerned, me as an American soldier, I would want to be noted as a hero for saving lives and not taking lives. And I don't understand what the mentality of these cold-blooded killers is, to the point to where they want to go out and just kill people because, I mean, don't people think for themselves?
Wait, what do you mean? I'm sorry.
To me, it's very upsetting. I mean, people are easily manipulated into going and fighting wars. Why can't people just think for themselves? I mean, are they that dumb, that stupid, or just that gullible?
I mean, I think that, you know, I think that that's a product of, you know, I mean, you've been in the U.S. military. I think that that it's a product of, you know, military has to indoctrinate hatred for the enemy and make you able to kill the enemy, right? But again, I don't understand. Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of American soldiers, and not all of them come back from, a lot of them come back from Iraq feeling very guilty for you know, things they participated in, and for people they may have killed. You know, Chris Kyle, I think, is a little different. I don't think I've ever met anybody who comes back and brags about the kills. I think that's a sign of somebody who should be, their guns should be taken away. They shouldn't be given guns to go kill people if they're saying they enjoy killing people. That's a serial killer.
Yeah, it's a serial killer. You're correct. Yeah. It is definitely... Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I mean, yeah, that's pretty much it. I think that's a sort of I think that's a sign of a psychopath, not somebody, you know, and that's not, even among people who've been indoctrinated to go abroad and kill the enemy, if you will, to enjoy it, is a big red flag.
Right. But this guy is also a proven liar. He said that he knocked out Jesse Ventura in a bar, and Jesse Ventura sued his estate and ended up winning a large sum of money because it was proven that Chris Kyle was nothing but a liar.
Yeah, Chris Kyle was an American liar. I mean, that's not all he lied about. He also lied about, he claimed that he went to New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina and climbed atop the Superdome and sniped sniped African-American looters. And he bragged about this. There's no record of this ever happening. Nobody was able to confirm it. And it's just one of the many lies that he and his family have told.
Right, so as far as we know, his entire story might have been lies, including
exactly
including his Iraq tour.
Right. No, exactly. I mean, I have not seen any evidence from, you know, any hard evidence produced by the U.S. Navy to, you know, saying that, you know, saying that he had 160 confirmed kills and they were all legitimate kills. I mean, I'd like to see some evidence of that beyond just a statement claiming it. I think that somebody actually has filed a Freedom of Information Act for his military record. And I'd be interested to see that, to see what actually took place. Because, I mean, in his book, he explicitly says that he wishes he could shoot. I mean, he says that he didn't. He claims he didn't. But he says that he wishes he could shoot people with Qurans. So, and he also claims, like, he claims to have shot, you know, some of the claims are just so outlandish. In one part of his book, he claims to have participated in like a training simulation exercise that where he accidentally took down an actual drug dealer that somehow ended up at the simulation that he thought was just an actor playing a role in the simulation. And like, he just makes these really outlandish claims, some of them that just seem completely false. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know that, I don't know that his word should be trusted at all. And I'm really shocked that there was a movie made on him. And I have to also add that the Chris Kyle that's presented is completely, I mean, he's sanitized. He's shown as somebody who's anguished over killing people. That is not the Chris Kyle in the book. The Chris Kyle in the book has no qualms whatsoever with shooting down women. The first woman he shot, the first person he shot was an Iraqi woman who, you know, if anything, was defending her homeland. I mean, and he says that she was despicable evil like he's never seen before. Yeah.
He was able to tell that through a scope.
Yes.
You know, I've looked at a lot of people through rifle scopes, and I've not once been able to tell if somebody was evil or a good person or what their motive was. If I am out to kill them, then I'm a killer, period. So, but I'm not, of course. Thank God that I have never done that, even in my military career. And I thank God for that, because I believe now that it is the ultimate sin, thou shalt not kill. And
interestingly enough, Chris Kyle claimed to be a Christian. He even got a Crusader tattooed on his arm. A Crusader tattoo on his arm, and he had it on his arm in red to represent blood, he said, so that everybody would know he was a Christian. If anything, he was a bit of a Crusader in Iraq.
Well, I don't know. I would have thought that he was something other than a Crusader, because for a Christian to go out and kill, it is blasphemy to begin with. And this is one thing that they don't understand. Thou shalt not kill was a commandment given, and it doesn't deter from those words, thou shalt not kill. It doesn't say you can kill in war or you can murder and for any reason whatsoever. So with that being said, Rania, I want to thank you for your time here with us on The People Speak. And hopefully we'll have you on again soon once we figure out what is going on and what else we can put out for our listeners to understand. I'd like people to join us next week. We have a couple of different shows for you this coming week. We've got on Monday, we have Dr. Caldicott from Australia. And on Tuesday, we have Dr. Stephen Greer. He will be talking about getting the government to release records on extraterrestrials. So make sure you join us here on The People Speak next week. This is Rock Cash signing off the BBS Radio Network. Thank you, Don Newsom. You're an awesome engineer.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to to the New York Island, redwood forest, to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.